Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to another Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with Adam Buxton making his third appearance. Very exciting. I'm going to try something a bit different. I've resisted being sponsored on these podcasts, except by idiots who have paid on the Kickstarter. And this isn't exactly a sponsorship because the people I'm recommending don't know I'm doing this. But I've recently moved house and I've changed energy company to Bulb, who are a renewable energy company. It's about £200 a year less than I've been paying before, and loads of their energy is renewable. They're really good, and I rang up their customer services, and they were great, and all the other people I worked with were shit. So I thought I'd recommend Bulb if you want to change your energy, people. Plus, there is some mercenary point to this as well. If you use the code bulb.co.uk/refer/richard234 when you're signing up, then you'll get a £50 credit. And I'll get a £50 credit, and hopefully I'll never have to pay for energy ever again. So if you're moving energy anyway, check out. There's loads of comparison sites. Bulb are pretty good. There's loads of other ones. All the big ones are cunts. And also, because they're not actually sponsoring me, if they're shit, I will tell you in another podcast. So it's a perfect win-win situation. Anyway, go to bulb.co.uk/refer/richard234, and you can get £50, and I can get £50 of free energy. I'm just going to leave my fridge open if lots of people do it. So... it's got to be worth it for that, right? Anyway, let's watch the kind of guy who does this sort of thing all the time. Adam Buxton on Rahalastapas. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who just paid 5p for a twirl, effectively. Yeah, find out how. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Welcome. Welcome to another edition of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was at the Virgin Megastore the other day, hanging out, playing Adam's Family Pinball in the basement with some Dutch tourists. And those guys called it Rahalastapas. So I don't know if that's going to catch on. So on my way to the theatre this evening, I'm trying to give up chocolate.
So I stopped off at Sainsbury's and bought a twirl. Do you know it's hard? There's a lot of air in that. Barely counts. It's a bagging area, automatic bagging area, one of those machines in there. And it's 50p for a twirl. Not bad, actually, is it? I was in WH Smith and paid 96p for one the other day. So don't shop at WH Smith. That is my advice to you if you're buying twirls. I put my 50p in and I noticed in the little coin rejection thing, 45p. Someone else had gone out. Hadn't taken their change, Little Richie Herring pocketed that. 5p for a twirl, that's how it's done, ladies and gentlemen. Now, but is that... Someone got taken to court for... someone had been at a cash machine in a shop and dropped £10 and the person picked up the £10 and pocketed the £10 and were taken to court and prosecuted for stealing £10 from that person. Which, you know, it's a slightly different example. That genuinely happened. But, you know, ethically, it's a moral maze, isn't it? I don't know whose 45p it was... You know, should I really have gone up to them and said there was 45p there in the coin? If someone comes back and says, can you hold this for them? And give it to, basically give 45p to Ian Sainsbury? What would you do? That's the question. What would you do? I kept the money. That's what I did in my own thought. 5p twirl. I enjoyed my 5p twirl. But I'm going to ask Adam Buxton about that because that's the kind of thing that I think he'll have a lot to say about. So will you please, I've given away... Given away what's coming up. Will you please... Well, given away the secret of who the guest is. And I said, when you hear your name, come on. So I'm glad that he didn't. So will you please... Will you please welcome a man? I can't remember how I've introduced him before, what he was best known as before, so I hope it wasn't this. He's probably best known as Louise from Takeover TV. That's why we're here. It's Adam Buxton, ladies and gentlemen. Adam Buxton. Here he comes. Here he is. Welcome, sit down.
Thank you so much.
Third time guest, Adam, third time guest. You're the first ever third time guest.
Thank you, I'm honoured.
You're the first ever second time guest as well.
Yeah, but you did tell me the last time I saw you that the only other second time guest, David Mitchell, was funnier overall.
I think he's almost the perfect guest for this podcast.
He's more or less the perfect guest for more or less anything.
He is.
Isn't he?
And because he treats me, you treat me as an equal. He treats me very much as a slightly intelligent five-year-old child. And that is the correct way to deal with me. So I can't believe... And I was amazed that the last time you were on was 3 years ago.
I know.
I just can't believe how quickly those 3 years...
It was a very different world.
It was.
It was a simpler time.
It was. So that's incredible.
I know. And what have I achieved since then?
Well, quite. You got a hat. You didn't have that hat before.
That's true. Yeah. It's baseball cap time.
Yeah.
I've had a few moments recently where I suddenly saw my head. And one time was at the Brixton Academy, giving an award to Louis Theroux as part of the NME Awards. And I turned around. First of all, I was very nervous about what I was going to say, and I overthought it. That's one of my favorite things to do, is overthink.
I like that about you.
A situation. I like to overthink everything. And so I overthought that. And I think I spoke about it on my podcast, but I was going to do my Donald Trump joke. Around the like at the beginning of the year when everyone, it was award ceremony time and everyone was going on about like, we've got to stick together, the artistic community, and we've got to, you know, stand up to this kind of thing. And I thought it'd be funny to go on and say, you know, I think it's very important for us all to stick together and just give Donald Trump a chance. Because I think he's got a lot of good ideas and there's no one's really listening to what he has to say and they're being quite mean about him, so why don't we all... So, you know, if I'd said that with you guys, it would have gone really well, but at the NME Awards, I chickened out, and in the end, I just went for making a joke about how loud it was. I went up there, I said, it's very loud. When Wiley was playing, my guts were shaking, and I thought I was going to do a poo. I mean, because of the bass... And all I could see was MIA staring at me and kind of kissing her teeth in a way that I didn't think was positive. And so then I said, all right, well, let's get to the nomination, I said. Right, because I was so flat, you know, I was so like rattled, I forgot to say nominations.
Right.
So she said, let's take a look at the nomination. Turn round, and for a second before the giant screen cut to the clip package, I just saw the back of my head with a huge bald spot.
Oh.
And I just thought, it's hat time. And more and more, whenever I get the opportunity, it's hat time now.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
For a while, it was my dad's old cap, right. His flat cap. So I wore it for sentimental reasons after he died. But then I saw a tweet from someone who was saying, why can't we... I can't remember exactly what the wording was, but the implication was, stop pretending that you're wearing a flat cap for any other reason than that you're a UKIP voter.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got a Nuttall overtone.
That's a shame, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not a UKIP voter.
But you live in Norwich. You must...
Actually, I think... Didn't Norwich go Labour? I think it did.
I think Norwich also was Remain, because I did a joke in my last tour about wherever I was, I'd say something about how I thought racism was right in the course of a routine.
Yeah.
And then it'd be... And I go, oh, I thought this would go better post-Brexit. And Norwich, Norwich was one of the places that they went, well, actually, we voted Remain, I think. So.
Yeah, well, I won't do my Trump joke there.
No, though. Okay.
When I did my Trump joke at the 100 Club, it went badly.
Yeah.
And I just... There was a period of silence, and then a guy at the back, after I'd said, oh, he's got a lot of good ideas, Trump, the guy just goes, like what? And at that point, I should have, if I was a better comedian, I would have started reeling off some of his ideas and got behind them. But I just went, oh, I was joking.
Sometimes that's the only response to a heckler. I'm sort of doing jokes. Oh, sorry. Didn't realise how it
was. I wasn't being serious.
I think very shortly, maybe after that last podcast, I bumped into you in the streets of Norwich. I summoned you up.
Yeah, that was weird.
I was on tour in Norwich, whatever year that was, and I went out my hotel and I was trying to find the town centre and I turned the wrong way and I ended up doing a massive loop all around Norwich and went through this sort of weird, really old shopping arcade that looked like it was from the 1900s.
Anglia Square.
That is it. I knew you'd know, and that was I felt like I'd gone through Goodnight Sweethearting, genuinely. And it was really bizarre. And then I kind of was looping around, I was sort of looking at the skyline, trying to spot cathedrals and find my way back. And then I was thinking, oh, God, I'm lost. And my phone had run out of battery. I couldn't check my phone. It was terrible. And suddenly realised how lost you are in the modern world. I thought, oh, I wonder if I'll bump into Adam Buxton while I'm in Norwich. And literally, 5 seconds later, a car pulls in front of me into this... DIY shop or carpenter.
Framer's shop.
Yeah, Framer's shop, that's
right. It's where I get all the pictures of myself framed.
And I thought, fucking rude bastard. And then I looked and I'd conjured Adam Buxton up. And he'd say me, he said, yeah, you are heading the right direction. That is where the town is.
I think I was even thinking of you as well, because I saw a tweet that you were in Norwich or I knew you were doing a show. It was very weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose that it's not astronomically improbable, but that the timing of it was very odd.
But, what a waste of a coincidence, really. And I was actually, if you'd appeared like an hour earlier, you could have saved me walking all around Norwich, just said you've gone the wrong way there. And B, if there's someone orchestrating all of this, I mean, that seems a very strange use of their powers.
Yeah, but you don't know. There might be some way that it works out. There might be a punchline to the whole thing that we're not aware of.
Well, we'll see. At the end, maybe we'll find out at the end. The end of everything.
Yes. Or we'll find out there's no punchline and God will just say, I was just joking.
It could be, but it was a weird thing. But I still can't. I can't believe three. My wife thinks I'm weird because, like, last we were in Norwich. I'm usually with my wife in Norwich because she's got friends in Norwich, and I always get there. And whenever I'm on tour, I only get to a town and then think, oh, I know someone in this town. And then my wife thinks I'm weird because I never then just tweet you and say, do you want to meet up for a drink? And I think it's too late to tweet you and meet up for a drink. Who do you think's right?
No, you could definitely do it. I'll respond to let's meet up for a drink tweets. Yeah. I had a drink with Matt Holness.
Did you?
Yeah. And there's a guy called Baker Terry who does these. He is one of the people that does Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared. Have you heard of those? He's just moved to Norwich.
Are you a sociable person? I'm not. So I won't.
No.
So I think women find men strange in that, and that they'll get someone and go, you know someone here, why aren't you ringing them up and talking to them and say, let's meet up?
Yeah, no, I'm delighted. The thing is that I'm delighted whenever I'm on my own.
Yeah.
I stay with a friend. Like tonight, I'm staying with a friend in London, but he's not there. And if I knew that he was going to be there tonight, I would have got a hotel. But the thing is that, and that's not because he's one of my oldest friends. I love him dearly, but it's just that I value, especially when you have a family and there's a lot of people in the house, you know, you value that time totally alone. And when you're on the road, like I wouldn't like to be on the road for weeks and weeks. I don't really tour like that.
No.
But if I've got a day or two here or there, it's party time. I'm going to sit on my own and I'm going to watch a lot of Frank Zappa documentaries. And I'm not going to have to justify it or argue with
it. It is true.
Anyone.
I mean, like, I don't know if you get this, when I'm on tour, quite a lot of, you know, a fan will say, well, you know, why don't you come and sleep? We've got a spare room. Like, going to the Edinburgh Fringe, offer people, we've got a spare room in our flat. Why don't you come and live in our spare room for the month? You kind of go, well...
Didn't you do that once before and it turned out to be a weird shrine? Or am I thinking of Alan Partridge?
No, Stuart.
Oh, that was Stuart.
Stuart did it and then that became Alan Partridge.
Right.
It generally happened to Stuart, basically. But And the person, it's such an amazing story, but I think I've told it before, but the person, it was a student, he went back to this place, there were posters of, he says himself, but apparently lots of other comedians as well on the wall, there were people watching Animal Farm, the porn version, in the lounge, which was where they said they had a spare room, so he had to lie on this mattress while people watched quite hardcore, I don't know if there's any not hardcore animal pornography, I suppose where you just see someone teasing the tit of a pig or something. I don't know. I think all animal pornography is fairly fairly full on.
That's a gap in the market you've identified. I'm going to get to work.
It's stroking. But later I discovered the student that Stuart slept on the floor and invited Stuart back to his flat was Christine O'Connell, the DJ, the future DJ.
Right.
Who then defended himself, saying there were other... It wasn't just Stuart Lee posters. But that was the impetus that Peter Bainham then took and put that into Alan Partridge.
There you go.
So, and Stu wrote a film and a book about... and a routine about the pig fucking, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just about that. That would be quite a... It was just a film of a man watching hardcore animal That is just animal pornography, isn't
have you
it?
Ever, we don't
away.
Need to spend a long time on this, but I'm curious to know if... Have you ever watched porn with a group of people?
I did when on a stag night, we as an ironic joke, one of the boys brought along a quite hardcore pornography video. And this was before the internet had really taken off as a place where you could watch these things quite easily. And I found it quite embarrassing and slightly...
I never understood it.
No.
You know, that's for private time.
It's a solo moment, really.
Yeah. But maybe that's my problem.
Yeah. Well, no, I think pornography is very embarrassing. I was backstage. I was filming with Jessica Knappett, and I wanted to check something on the internet, and I realised the thing that comes up first, if you put www in there, it is a pornography site.
Do you not have...
And Jessica Knappett was disgusted.
Don't
with
you me. Use Google Chrome?
No, I don't.
Come on, mate. It's got the whole point is it's got the incognito window, a.k.a. the wanky window. And it pops up, and it's all grey, and it's got a little picture of a guy in a trilby with his collar pulled up, with shades on, like you're on spy business. And of course, actually, the graphic should just be the same guy, but with his knob out. And whatever you do within the confines of the wanky window is not supposedly logged in your history and doesn't pop up at inopportune moments.
I'm not really
moments.
Ashamed of it, you know. I'm not bothered about it. I don't think my wife would mind.
No, there's no... Well, I don't know. I'm not... But pornography in general is, it's you know, it would be better if it didn't exist. To engage your imagination.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know.
And also to.
Do you remember in the old days when you used to have to. Occasionally you have to have a wank again where you have to use your imagination. And it's a very strange experience. But that used to be. That used to be the whole time. That used to be everything you have to. And now, you know, I managed to do it and I didn't. Just use my brain. Yeah. Might be about being old as well.
It's a good feeling.
So if you were at a supermarket, and I think this is a very Adam Buxton, you know, conundrum.
Oh, yeah.
I bought a twirl from Sainsbury's. It cost 50p. I put 50p in the machine.
Yep.
And then as I put the 50p in, I noticed there was 45p in the coin tray already that someone had forgotten to pick up their change. So I got a twirl for 5p. I delightfully and delightedly pocketed the 45p. What would Adam Buxton do? Now, I didn't see the person had long gone. I didn't see them. It wasn't like I'd seen them not take it and then waited and jumped and pocketed it. There was no way of finding the person. Would you keep the 45p?
That's yours, yeah. Yeah. That's a bonus. That's a cosmic bonus. I mean, it's derisory considering all the nightmarishness that the cosmos is trying to offset.
Yeah. With...
Instead of saying, well, you know, ISIS, but free 12.
Yeah.
Or at least 12 for 5p. It won't even give it you free. It's just saying, listen, I appreciate that there's some horrible, horrible stuff going on. But look, you can have this for 5p.
Yeah.
So what about that? I would take it. Yeah, sure.
What if the person then ran back into the shop? You'd already pocketed the money. My 45p. Would you just walk away or would you say, hey, I
would probably give it to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel guilty all the time and I'm worried I'm going to get busted for all sorts of things. Yeah. So I do appreciate an opportunity to be upstanding. But today I got into a confrontation. Well, after a long period of thinking, I think I'm out of my confrontation phase. Maybe I'm sort of growing up a little bit. I don't know. And I was at Cambridge Station at the W.H. Smiths there, mm-hmm. getting my...
12s and 96p. And they're very expensive in W.H. Smiths.
That's outrageous. Well, I'm unlikely to get a free one after today. Yeah. I go there all the time. There's always the same guy there, although today there were three serving people behind the counter. I don't know if they were trainees or what, but they were there in force. And I'd been asked by my friend that I'm staying with, in fact, if I could pick up a pack of tobacco. And I know what kind of tobacco he likes, but I couldn't remember the name. Comes in a green packet. Don't remember the name. So I went up and I said, oh, can I have a pack of tobacco? Yeah, what kind? I don't remember the name. Can I just see the tobacco stuff? No. Because they're behind these big black shutters now, right?
Yeah.
That say you have to be over 18. And I'm like, okay, can I just have a quick look and then I'll buy the one I want? No, you can't. Why is that? Because it's illegal. Right. Okay, but I mean, you open it when people buy cigarettes though, right?
Yeah.
So if I just say that I'm going to have some Marlboro Lights, then you'll have to open it and give them to me. And he was like, well, do you want some Marlboro Lights? I was like, yes, okay, can I have a pack of Marlboro Lights? And so the lady who was there, who looked furious with me already, was just sort of like, what's your fucking problem? She was looking at me. And she kept on going, no, it's illegal. Do you want us to lose our jobs? I was like, no, I just want some fucking tobacco and I can't remember the name of it. So I go, yeah, I'll have a pack of Marlboro Lights then. And by the way, I have no intention of buying the Marlboro Lights, I said. And she said, oh, well, then you can't have them. I was like, no, okay, sorry. Please, I would like a pack of Marlboro Lights. So she goes up to the... She stands in front of the cupboard. Literally like that. And she opens it a crack, reaches in, grabs them, and then closes it again. And so that'll be $11.99, thank you. However much it was. I was like, oh, no, I've changed my mind. I don't want them now. And she said, well, you should go. I said, why can't I just see what I'm buying. And the thing that was winding me up was how they were just falling back on saying, it's the rules, yeah, we'll get arrested. Obviously, I knew that there was some goofy rule about you can't display them openly for underage people, you have to be over 18. But I since checked the actual ruling. If you are over 18, of course you can fucking look at the fucking things to see what you're fucking buying, but you have to be over 18. Jesus Christ. But these people, they were digging in so hard and just saying, no, it's illegal. Do you want us to pay £1,000 fine and lose our jobs? I was like, wait. Just explain to me. Like, I wanted them to be able to say, like, what the reason for the rule was, so that I could say, yes, you're protecting children with this rule. Clearly, I'm over 18. But we never got to that point. And instead, I got my phone out and I started recording. Because I thought, well, this, I don't know, it might be fun for the podcast or something. So I got out my phone and I started pressing record, and the three of them were staring at me by that time. This lady was getting really upset. And by the way, I had been scrupulously polite. No swearing, no name calling.
No.
So it's pretty great from Buckles. And so I start recording on my phone and I start saying, right, so I'm here at Cambridge Station. I'm trying to buy some tobacco. I can't remember the name of it, but they won't let me look in the cupboard. And at that point, the woman just runs off to the corridor light behind the stockroom, grabs the phone off the wall and goes, "Give me the police! I need the police! There's a very disruptive customer in the shop. He's causing all kinds of trouble." And then one of the other shop assistants sort of runs over to her and goes, I don't think we need them. He's got a pink Brompton. Look at him. And I was saying right the way through, like, I'm not trying to wind you guys up. I'm really not. I just, we're human beings. This is silly. But we're all grown up people.
Yeah.
And you're just sort of mouthing these rules as if, and you're not thinking about why they're there and what the reason for them is. You know, there's no children even in this shop. This is madness. And the weird thing is that at the end of it, you know, it's madness anyway because you're buying tobacco, and that's madness. That's a form of madness as well, isn't it? To hasten your own demise. And I just thought, everything's fucking mad. This is madness. There's no way we can survive. But that was Cambridge. It wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen in London. Londoners stick together.
But for me, those moments are few and far between. For me, that's gold. You know, if something like that happens to me, it's gold dust. Like, I was, before the shows, I was talking about a fight I had when I was just approaching being 40. And, you know, it meant that I had 15 minutes for the show that I was about to do, you know, straight away. And that story is immediate. That's a complete routine. So I had a confrontation with a postman that we talked about, I think, quite recently in the podcast. So I won't go through the whole thing again. But I was actually quite pleased with it because it was almost 10 years to the day since I had this proper fight with someone.
Yeah.
And he was very angry with me because I posted too many Kickstarter awards into all of the postboxes. and then I went up to him and said, "Can you put these in the van?" He went, "No, I can't fucking put them in the van. You're such a selfish man." He was furious with me. And we had about a 10-minute, quite heated discussion. But by the end of it, we were sort of friends. And it felt, you know, I shook his hand and said, "Look, I'm sorry." We'd made each other laugh a little bit. He was quite a cool, nice guy. And I realised I was partly to blame, but not really.
That's a good feeling. You know, really, I like it when they
and
go like that.
And then I walked
that.
Away and I actually felt... I was saying to people earlier that punching someone in the face feels amazing. But actually walking away from that thinking, oh, actually we had a proper fight. We had a proper argument.
Right.
But we both went away from it feeling like, okay, we're okay with this.
There was no physical...
There was no physical fight. He was sort of in the right. Except he said, "I'm going to open one of these and find out your name and I'm going to get you fined. You're going to have to pay for this." And I said, "Well, you know, have I not paid £500 worth of postage? Was that not the payment to put this in a postbox?" So, you know, it is when you get those two things colliding and they're in a bad mood and you've done so. You know, I'd literally ruined his day by filling four postboxes with emergency question Kickstarter books. But it's, you know, it's not as good as that story. So, you know, I'm going to pretend that happened
but
to
I,
me.
But I... I wish that we had made friends at the end. I even went up to the guy as I was leaving the store, realizing, because he went off to help a customer with some water that wasn't included in the meal deal. And I thought, I see this guy all the time. This is nuts, you know, this is daft. So I went up and I was like, maybe they just were irritated by me. I don't know what. But I went up and I said, listen, I'm really sorry. I wasn't trying to, like, wind you up. And he just said, well, I know, but there's no answer to it, really. You're going to have to get in contact with the government.
But it's a, you know, so it's a very unusual thing when something resolves and you both more or less feel, you know, because people harbour grudges, don't they? People, and you know, forever.
Yeah, man.
And like, you know, so that all that's happening in politics now. I was saying in the last week's podcast, they're a much better audience last week. I tweeted things about the Labour Party 6 weeks ago, and then people have waited 6 weeks to come back. Oh, are you going to eat your words now? And they, and they've just sort of delighted, not going, yeah, but nobody could have really foreseen this 6 weeks ago. So yeah. if you did, you were insane 6 weeks ago. And I'm also delighted about what's happened, so it doesn't matter. But it's sort of like the way that people will hold on to something and want to, you know, it's very difficult to let things go. So it's nice to, in my story, that, and you attempted to let that go.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you had done absolutely nothing.
It's a no, pretty, it's I pretty, mean, it was weird, because usually I'm much more in the wrong than that.
Yeah.
But it was weird this time.
I like the ones when you're in the wrong the most.
Oh, God. But I mean, I talked on the Six Music Show years ago. In fact, it was one of the anecdotes where things got very frosty in the studio, because Joe didn't know, he felt it made him uncomfortable, because it reflected very badly on me, and so he then felt that it reflected badly on him by proxy. So he was just squirming, and he's like, this is no good for anyone, this story. And then our producer James Sterling, he didn't actually do the cut gesture, but he was reaching for it, and it was basically about me getting a ticket when I still lived in London. And we were in the process of moving out of London, so we no longer had residence parking. I had a book of temporary parking permits.
Yeah.
And so every time I got to the house, because I was very gradually moving all my stuff out of there, every time I drove the car to the house, I would have to run into the house, grab a permit. Obviously, the most sensible thing would have been to keep them in the car, but I would never remember. So I'd had to run into the house, grab a permit, and stick it in the car. And one time I did it, and in the space, literally 30 seconds of me running into the house and grabbing a permit, I got a ticket.
Right.
And I just fucking lost it. And said, and just went, you are making things worse in the world. You know, all the cliches, all the pathetic, small man things to say to someone who is just trying to do his job. I went for every single one. And then at a certain point, out of sheer desperation, latched onto the fact that at one point this guy who was, you know, weathering all my nonsense, just went, oh, after one particularly bad point that I made, he said, nigger, please. And he was a person of colour, right?
Okay.
So he felt within his rights to use that expression.
Yeah.
But I said, how dare you? How dare you? That is utterly unacceptable language. That is the most offensive thing I have ever heard. I am going to report you. You can't use language like that. And I just went for that, milked it for ages. And then I ended up stomping down the street, filming him on my phone. And then he called the cops. And then at that point, I said, please, please don't call the cops. I'm sorry. I'm having a bit of a breakdown, and I'm very sorry. And then we had the same sort of thing that you described, where we ended up shaking hands, and he actually said to me, like a film, you know, I think if it was like different circumstances, we could probably get on pretty well. And it was quite beautiful, but only after something that was really grotesque.
Yeah.
And sort of left me feeling insane and frightened for myself. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But it's thrilling. I mean, that's, you know, it's a thrilling thing when the life overspills in that way and you lose your...
You feel alive.
Yeah. I mean, I do it with my wife all the time. I'm always arguing with my wife.
Yeah, but are you good at the apology section?
No.
Ah.
No, I just go and sulk until she forgets.
I thought we'd established no one forgets.
They don't. But, you know, to actually have a... contretemps in real life with someone is... But I think as you get older, I think it becomes, you know... I don't... In a way... That's not true, though, is it? Because a lot of old people are the worst at it, aren't they?
Yeah. And by the way, I'm shocked that I actually used that expression. In the past, I've told that story. Obviously, when I told it on Six Music, I said N-word.
Yeah.
But it's been so long. It's such a shocking word,
it is.
Isn't it? Oh, dear. It's terrible. It would have been the wrong... decision to use it on Six Music. But it was...
I said piss on Six Music and they nearly shut the station down.
Oh.
I dropped a coffee on myself and, you know, and I was talking, oh, no, and then I went, oh, it looks like I pissed myself, I think is what I said.
Really?
Yeah, and then I had to do an apology... 5 minutes later, I had to apologise.
Oh.
And there was quite a big hoo-ha.
That's bad. Yeah, it was never. It was always uncomfortable whenever things like that happened. Yeah. Everyone got so upset.
I mean, Six Music though, anything would go. You know, piss is fine, isn't it?
You would think it's all about rock and roll.
It is.
Who's listening? I mean, it's people who listen to naughty music with swearing words.
It is. Yeah, you'd think. Let's have a look at what let's talk about your podcast. You came up with this good idea of interviewing sort of comedian celebrities, and you've turned into quite the success.
Yeah.
Award-winning.
Yeah, we've had amazing guests on there. We had Rich Herring, Scroobius Pip. I'm basically just going to reel through a load of people who were on your podcast first. But that's the way it works.
No, well, Anders, it's been a bit of both, and you've managed to get some people that... I think because the nice thing about your one, I think, is that you go where they are.
Yeah.
Rather than saying you have to come here, and a lot of people get put off by the idea of... You know, you can understand. I mean, look. Look at some of the people who are, you know, literally within... They could spit at you here or throw their excrement... And they have done on many occasions. So that's quite an intimidating thing for...
Indeed.
Someone like Michael Palin, who is my absolute dream guest, who you got, and it's a beautiful... you know, I don't think I could do anything approaching what you did with Michael Palin.
I would have been keen to hear who would have been in his human centipede.
Yeah, me too. I think the people I'm in awe of, I find it very difficult to do that, but also to resist the urge to ask them the most inappropriate
well,
questions.
Exactly.
Just knowing it will ruin everything. You know, you built up a nice... you've built up a nice rapport with Michael Palin. You've talked about the death of your father and the illness of his friend.
Yeah.
And then you go, have you ever tried to suck your own... Which is what I would do.
But ultimately, that is... the right thing to do.
Yeah.
That's why your podcast is very funny and good. And I've listened to more episodes of your podcast than any other and liked them. Like, I listen to many other podcasts, but you go through phases with them. You know, you fall in and out of love with them. And I don't think I've ever really fallen out of love with yours. And I'm constantly surprised by it. Who was what's the name of the Tourette's hero lady?
Yeah, Jessica Tom.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. I was thinking, like, what other podcast... would be like this combination of surprising, interesting, funny, weird, spontaneous stuff. It was brilliant, an eye-opener. So listeners, if you haven't heard that one, which episode is it?
Oh, God knows, about 130-something.
Jess Tom. It's
really
great, because I didn't know about her.
That's the nice thing, but you do. I mean, you have a nice mix as well. I mean, I think it's interesting. I think both of us are doing something we really enjoy doing. It's such a pleasure doing this show. Like I was just saying, like backstage and here is such nearly always just incredibly good fun. So it's a lovely job to do. And we're both creating a world that's our own world, and we're in charge of that world in both the things we do. I did it first. You came on and said, oh, I'll do that then and win all the awards then. and managed to somehow transfer it into getting onto TV as well. I don't know how he did that.
I've been banned. No, I'm a head in a jar in the new.
Yeah, you are.
Crystal Maze reboot.
Yeah. How was that? Have you recorded those already?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was 4 not very strenuous days' work. It's like, you know, in Futurama, they have their heads in the jars, same sort of thing. They've got a future zone in this reboot of The Crystal Maze, hosted by Richard Ayoade. And I am the head in the jar. They haven't even bothered to make it look as if my head is floating in the jar. It's clearly just a guy with his head stuck through a jar. And also they designed it so that it looked okay from a certain camera position, but actually when you go behind the set and stick your head through it, it's unbelievably uncomfortable. And you're in this sort of precarious position, and they put out a couple of pillows or something. But depending on how long, and I give riddles to the people who go in there, and if they get the riddle right, they get a crystal. And depending on how long it took them to do the riddles, I was sometimes stuck in this like really difficult position trying to hold my head.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Out through this hole for about 15 minutes, and you know, I'm nearly 50, and so I'd get pins and needles in my legs, and I wouldn't really be able to walk when I
shouting out the answers. It's fish.
Yeah, it's oh man, it was very most of the riddles they didn't get right at all, and I felt like, oh, this is weird. Why isn't it? This should be easier. I thought these riddles were quite easy. I retooled some of them to try and make them more accessible. But it was good fun, though.
Yeah, yeah.
They built a massive, great set out there in Bristol at the Bottle Yard or whatever it's called. It's huge studios out there. And it looks magnificent. Richard is very funny. I really had to do about 15, 20 minutes of work a day. And that was it. And they had good Wi-Fi in the dressing room. So it was fun.
That's very exciting. And well, you went to America as well with your podcast.
Yeah, I did.
So how are you funding all of this? Are you doing this? Are you managing to do this through the sponsorships?
Yeah. So it's good old Squarespace. Yeah. Where would the podcasting world be without Squarespace?
I turned them down.
Yeah. Well, you don't do any ads, though, right?
I don't. Weirdly, on this one, I've done, which I meant to ask about it backstage.
Oh, you do sort of...
Well, I publicise this. On this one, I've done a thing, as if you were watching at the beginning, I've changed energy providers, and I think you might... Have you mentioned this?
Oh, Bulb, yeah.
Yeah, and so now we're competing on this. But I think they're quite good, and they haven't asked me to sponsor the thing. So I thought I'd just mention they were good.
Right.
But then also, if you give a code out and people want to change their energy provider to that, they get a £50 credit, and I get a £50 credit. And I hopefully never have to pay for energy ever again.
Right. Well, they supposedly...
And they're ethical. It's renewable energy, and they're one of the... It's cheaper.
It is currently cheaper.
But also, by them not paying me, and I can, if they're shit, I can in the next podcast go, no, don't go. And then they were yeah, awful. Thanks for the £50.
We tried to switch to bulb, but we weren't eligible because we're out in a part of the country and that our meter system isn't compatible. So I'm still planning
on doing
it. They sound
pretty shit, don't they?
Yeah. But no, the sponsorship is good. I mean, every now and again, I will come across that Bill Hicks routine where he's just going on about Jay Leno doing Doritos ads or whatever and saying, you know, if you do an ad, you're off the artistic roll call for life. No exceptions. Well, maybe Willie Nelson. But it always chastens me and makes me feel a little bit queasy. But then I just think, well, Bill, it's a different world now. The podcast model and the funding model wasn't something that Hicks was familiar with, and I'm sure he wouldn't have done that routine if Squarespace had been around.
If you're using that money to go and do podcasts elsewhere, then that's, you know.
Here's the thing, right? Because I do think about crowdfunding and Patreon and things like that, but how does it work with you? I would think that if that was my only funding model, source of income, whatever, to cover costs for the podcast, I would feel that I had to put all that money in a pot and I wasn't allowed to touch it for anything other than the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the deal, right?
Yeah, it sort of is. It becomes complicated by the fact that, like, doing the Kickstarter is actually much more complicated than doing the show.
Right.
So Chris Evans, not that one, basically works for about 2 months fulfilling all these pledges and doing all this stuff.
That's the thing.
So you can't just go. To begin with, I was very much like, no, all the money goes back in the podcast, but you're paying people to do the jobs that they're doing. So, you know, I think with this, and what I'm trying to do with this is get everyone to give me £1 a month. Or buy, you know, if everyone who listened to the podcast bought my emergency questions book from gofasterstripe.com.
Yep.
At £10 each, that would be £2 million I would have. So then I could do some exciting stuff. And, you know, that, I think that the money from that does all go back into making more podcasts. And that doesn't seem like that much to ask, really, if you've, like, enjoyed 150 podcasts and still get a book of questions that will be interesting in a social situation.
I'm looking at the emergency questions book now. It's open to page 60, first question. Are you a racist?
That is,
and then it says underneath NB, they'll probably say no, but you might catch one out. I'll buy it.
Yeah, I'll give you one for free.
yeah, that was the thing though, because I suddenly got into this scenario where it's like, well, if the podcast goes well, and it is, I do enjoy doing it, but it is very time consuming.
Yeah.
And easily every other thing that I have in my stupid career may fall away. And then I'm not allowed to use any of the money that I'm generating from this thing other than for more episodes of the podcast.
Yeah.
So if one of my family gets terminally ill and I need to get a bit of extra
It's healthcare. A complicated thing, and I think it comes from sort of English or British embarrassment. And we, you know, and I, when I started off, I wasn't charging anyone anything for any of the podcasts. Mm. I thought, well, if we charge people, then we might be able to do more interesting stuff and bigger shows. And, you know, like if I could raise a huge amount of money, it would be like, let's make a film, let's make a sitcom, let's, you know. So it's all to make more stuff. But I was actually on a panel with Roman Mars, who's a big American podcaster, and he was on the screen, and he couldn't believe that I wasn't taking any money at all for myself from it. So I think there, but with me it works because people come and see my tour.
Yeah.
And, you know, people come see this show and I get some of the money from the audience here. And so, you know, it does become a way of making some money. But yeah. I think it's interesting, but I also think you sort of probably have to think of some way to do it. A lot of people come to me and ask about Kickstarters, and you go, I think the reason my Kickstarters have worked is because I gave 5 years of free stuff, or, you know, I give a lot of free stuff, and I give quite a good reward, so people are happy to do it every now and again. But it's, you know, it's quite a complicated way of...
It really is. I mean, I justify it for myself by keeping my ads fairly short. They're at the beginning, generally.
And they're funny as well. You do a
I try to make them funny. Unfortunately, my lack of musical skills means that more or less all my songs sound the same.
It's extremely good. How's your relationship with Rolf Harris going? I always check in. I check in every 3 years.
What's his status? Has he
gone
out?
He's out now, and I think he was found remarkably innocent.
Was he?
I believe that's... what happened the last time, or at least not guilty.
Ruffle, good one.
Yeah, so he's, I think he's out. But there's, you know, I think his name has been tarnished.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he won't be drawing a portrait of the Queen again.
Was he? Oh, I've got to find out about this. Hey, I'll tell you one thing I was going to ask you about, yeah, about like stories and things that you're not quite clear on that you need to look up. Is, you know, you've mentioned a few times on this podcast, why is it that Kevin Bacon did those ads? Yeah. So do you know the answer
to
that?
I do know the answer because people tell me every time I mention it.
Oh,
but I still don't.
Okay.
I still don't. So
still
he was
don't
in a Ponzi. He was caught up in the Ponzi scheme.
I wouldn't pronounce it Ponzi.
Ponzi. Ponzi.
I'd emphasize the Z to take it
Ponzi.
Away. Ponzi, yeah.
But I still
Bernie
think...
Madoff is the person that fucked him over, yeah.
Yeah, but I would still argue that he's probably made enough money
back. There's other ways to make money. Than to
he's probably got all that back and he's still carrying on dressed up in his... And it's... You know, fuck it. Like, I mean, I used to really be Bill Hicks about all that sort of stuff. And I'm really not now. Because I think anything you do, and you can say... You know, you're doing a show on any commercial channel. You're funded by advertising.
Yeah.
You know, and you know everything's you're selling something.
I mean,
you're selling yourself
at the very
least. So.
Occasionally, I'll find myself reading YouTube comments for this and that clip from the BBC or whatever, and the arguments raging under there between people who are convinced that the BBC is just a bastion of left-wing bias, and then other. Just as many people who say that they're all right-wingers, they're all fascists, and, you know, it's... Yeah, you can't win.
No, you can't win.
And with a large corporation, there's going to be unpleasant aspects about them, and that's why I stick to vegetarian shoes as my sponsor.
But I also think it's a slightly patronising attitude towards the public, which I think is a problem with a lot of these things. So all the thing with the Daily Mail and the Sun, people going, oh, they're polluting people's minds, that, you know, they're brainwashing, and then nobody vote, you know, everyone votes against what the Daily Mail and the Sun said in their case. And I don't think people are, you know, I don't think people are listening to you going, oh, Adam Buxton just mentioned Squarespace, I better build my own website I love Adam Buxton and he'll be cross with me if I don't build it. If you listen to that and think, oh, I want to build a website and I want £10 off or 10% off or whatever it is, then yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then it's paid for everything else. I don't think people are stupid. People watch adverts and know that they're a load of shit. You know?
In the depths of my Bill Hicks induced anxiety. One time I went and researched all the people I respect who've done adverts to try and cheer myself up, make myself feel less of a filthy whore. David Lynch, he's done loads. That surprised me. Nissan, PlayStation, Adidas, Japanese Georgia Coffee with Carl McLachlan as a Twin Peaks guy.
Really?
Yeah. Alka-Seltzer, René Magritte. His clients were Belgian bookshops, a jeweller, and Alfa Romeo. Ridley Scott, obviously, Salvador Dali, Andy Warhol, Michel Gondry, they've all done it.
Yeah.
Dirty fuckers.
Anyway, I'll pick an emergency question for you just for the fun. Were you hit by the death of Roger Moore? That's not the emergency question.
I felt sad about it. It was not Bowie proportions.
No. You interviewed him, didn't you, Roger Moore?
Joe was the big Roger Moore obsessive.
Yeah.
And Joe sort of froze up with excitement at having Sir Roger there in the studio. And we didn't really have guests on our Six Music show, so it was very unusual.
Yeah, that's right.
But he was really charming,
yeah,
really sweet, and like responded the nicest possible way you could in that sort of situation. He wasn't patronizing at all. He was just unruffled and, you know, he's lovely.
Oh.
He was.
Not anymore.
But no, not anymore.
A woman.
Which was your favourite McWhirter twin?
Ross.
Ross, yeah.
Which one got killed?
Ross was the one who was murdered by the RA. And they're both dead now.
Right.
I'd heard stories about Norris McWhirter. They used to, they were quite unpleasant right-wing gentlemen, both of them. And Norris was especially of that persuasion.
Really?
And someone who worked on Record Breakers told me they used to deliberately surround him with as many children from ethnic minorities as they could in order to upset him. So he could.
It seems strange that Roy Castle would hang out with him.
Yeah,
he couldn't have been like.
Well, the thing with them at work, twins, is no one else could do that job, could they? Because they'd learnt the fucking book,
right?
So you know they were in. They didn't matter what they thought. No one could step in.
Yeah,
couldn't go. Oh.
I did a good noise when you told me that he'd been killed by the IRA. Yeah. I went, oh, yeah. That's my atrocity noise. Whenever I hear some new horrible attack. Oh, dear.
What is your favourite fraction?
Favourite? Can I ask what yours is first?
I quite like 3/8, I would say.
I like 2/3.
Yeah, 2/3 is good.
Because that's probably where I'm at in my life.
Yeah.
If I'm lucky.
Well, let's talk about that. I'm turning 50 in 1 month from the date of this recording.
Yes.
And you've just turned 48, I think you just had your birthday.
That's right, yeah, yes. Yeah.
So are you feeling the approach of 50 clawing at
your soul? Thought you were going to say the scythe. Yes, would be the answer to that. No, I am. Yeah, I've been bollocking on about it to a lot of my guests on the podcast. But yeah, since my dad died, it's just all completely crashed down on me, the whole mortality.
Yeah, but your dad was a pretty old man.
Yeah, but I was cheering myself up with that fact and thinking, oh yeah, my dad, he lived to 91, nearly 92. I'm going to live to 91, nearly 92. But I don't take care of myself. The way that my dad was, you know, he wasn't like a model of super fitness or anything, but he did like smoke right the way through the Second World War and drink booze a great deal through the rest of his life. And, you know, so I was hopeful. But then everyone I've spoken to since then has been like a close friend of mine. We were talking about this the other day and he said, nah, 70. Probably 70, that's, you know, and I always look through the obituaries and stuff, and
yeah.
It's a lot of 70s.
There are, yeah, there was a lot, 68, 70.
I think that's the age, yeah. for our generation, that's projected curtains.
Right.
Especially
that's
with,
still 20 years, 22 years.
20, that's, I mean, I know, nothing
like,
these days.
I mean, it's like unbelievable, so 3 years since
that's
I saw
blink
you,
of an
I
eye.
Would literally said that was 18 months, yeah. Jen, so like, if that I could have been, if you told me it was 6 months ago, I would have believed you,
yeah.
I could, you know, it was very fresh in my mind, but yeah, so those 3 years going very fast, it's that scary, and 10 years since I was 40, you know, 40 was a big deal. I'm not that worried about 50, I mean, I'm slightly worried about those, I'm slightly worried,
yeah.
About
well, when did you... Have you had a crisis already?
Yeah, I mean, I think 40, I was fairly...
How did it manifest itself?
Well, I was single, so I was getting drunk and hanging around with the people in their 20s and fighting university lecturers. And I was really... I mean, I was counting down the days.
How were you fighting university lecturers?
I had a fight with a university lecturer. That was my fist fight that I had when I was 40.
What was it about? History?
Well, no, it was about him... He'd been an appalling dick, basically, and he'd got into an argument with some young women that I was attempting to have sex with.
Right.
And so, well, one of them I was, or two if I got lucky. But and then he got violent towards them, and then he was dragged out of the bar, but then he waited outside the bar for us and then launched himself at me. And I would usually, any other time, I would have walked away from it, but I was just completely...
What did he go for?
Me. So he tried to kick this girl. He tried to kick this girl downstairs, what? And all his friends dragged him out.
He's a cad!
He was an awful man. And, he's, you know, then it turned out he was a university lecturer after all this, which is kind of even worse.
What did he lecture in?
I don't know. I think I did meet someone. It was a very complicated thing. I met someone, I think, who knew him. It was sort of a race thing as well, because this girl I was with had taken a dislike to him. We were having a conversation about Big Brother, and it was the week where the lady said the N-word that you said earlier.
Right.
And I would never say. So we were having that discussion about race, and she was saying she thought racism was funny because it was so ridiculous that being racist was ridiculous, so she found it funny. I said, yeah, probably don't ever say that out loud to anyone, but I get what you're talking about. But then this guy gave his business card to this girl that he fancied, and she handed it around, and this girl started ripping up this guy's business card, which was a sort of odd thing to do.
Whoa.
And he said, why did you do that? And she said, it's because because I am a racist.
Oh.
Which didn't make much sense to me. He was white and she was white and everyone was white. And then he went, my wife is black! And then flew into a tizzy. I don't understand why that really makes any difference. And also, why was he chatting up that girl and giving her a business card? So, but I think having met some people, I think he was sort of lying. He had a friend who was black or something.
That's exactly the kind of night that I do not miss.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing that marriage cures.
Yeah.
Or at least it's supposed to.
Well, you know, I'm delighted. I mean, shortly after that, but within a few months, I'd met my wife and everything changed for the better. And that was, so I had that was a very stabilizing influence and saved me, really. I think if I hadn't had that happen, I mean, I think it would have happened somehow, you know, someone with some idiot who fell in love with me. But I think if I hadn't, I would have been screwed.
Yeah.
Because I would just been carrying on drinking and it was already getting to the point where it was. Now at 50, the idea of spending a night drinking with someone who's 22 seems insane. Just like we're on two different, such different continents that just, you know, and certainly in a romantic way, just
probably
seems
on incontinence.
Yeah. Yeah. But there at 40, it felt sort of weird and a bit wrong, but
yeah,
just about acceptable. So it's you know, there's a big change in those 10 years, but those 10 years have gone so fast. That's the scary. I mean, a lot has happened and lots of great stuff's happened, but then that's the thing, going 10 years to... That's it. I think if you die in your 50s, people go, oh, God, that's... But if you die in your 60s, people go,
yeah. He had his chance.
I'm 11. Well, I'm 10 years, 2 months, or 10 years and a month and a day away from being in my 60s. Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of terrible. And my kids will be teenagers as I'm coping with that, which will be another story.
Do you hate hearing people talk about it? I mean, I like it personally.
I really talk about it. My wife won't let me talk about it anymore because I'm always talking about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm always saying that what she should do if I die. And
have you written?
I'm always working out what we should do if there's a terrorist attack where we are, and I'm always giving her advice about what she must do.
That sounds sensible.
Yeah.
Sounds very sensible.
And I'm ready to chuck myself in. I mean, the as terrible as all that London Bridge stuff obviously was, the stories you get of the guys who stood up to that are just phenomenal. And when you think about it, they had from their point of view, they had bombs on them and people were going and confronting them. So I would hope that, you know, you would be in that. But it's so moving and incredible, those guys.
I know. And in America as well, that fucking white supremacist twat on the train and those two guys that went for him, who got killed for their trouble. Awful.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't.
I don't think if I was on my own, I don't think I would.
I mean, I'd wait and see if there was absolutely no one else.
Yeah.
Then I would say, listen, I really think you should stop that. And I'm going to get my phone out and start recording this. There's a good chance it's going to end up on the podcast. So think about that. I don't want to have to tell you again.
Well, we're perhaps not there. I took my daughter to the little gym the other day. I want to talk to you about this and see how you feel about this. I took my daughter to the little gym, which is they do climbing up.
Oh, right.
Play and
it's
stuff
not a pirate.
Stuff. No. They do. I'm dressed as one today.
Hello, Phoebe. Hello, Phoebe. That's what he sounds like, little Jim.
But, you know, there's lots of... Dads are different ages there, of course, right? So I'm an older dad, and I've got a young daughter. But there was a guy who was a very tall, very athletic man. Mm. He was probably about 6'5".
Ooh.
And he had a three-year-old son, I'd say. And he was throwing him in the air, but not just throwing him in the air. He was throwing them... So the roof was twice as high as this, and he was throwing him so he was nearly touching the roof. And then catching him. And my daughter looked at him and went, yeah, do that. You know, she really wanted... She's very adventurous. So I threw her, like... She was still in my hands.
Yes.
But a tiny little bit. And, you know, I'm a shorter man and you're a shorter man and we're older men and I have younger kids than you do. But do you look at taller men like that and think, you know, would you like that or do you have it? Because people you're meant to have a complex about. One is meant to have a complex about being short and I count myself as a short
man.
Oh,
one does.
And do you have it? Because I don't really have it. I don't. That was the first time I went, oh, that would be nice.
I don't have it anymore because there's other things to worry about.
Yeah.
You know, there's more urgent problems when you look in the mirror these days than just, not saying you, I'm saying one.
True.
But, you know, the folds. And the mottling, the rippling. Yes, I used to have a massive complex about it. Yeah. And I think, are a lot of your friends tall?
I mean, not, some are, but not.
Most of mine are.
And you've got very lanky friends.
Yeah, lanky friends. My wife is considerably taller than I am. And, you know, it doesn't take a genius to realize that I've got a complex about it. Small man. Because I do think... I mean, I think most of the studies have shown that, like, for example, CEOs, people in positions of power, tend to be taller. There are always exceptions that prove the rule, of
course. Napoleon, who was actually...
Napoleon is the one that people come back to.
But he wasn't that small.
Adamant used to cheer me up when I was younger because he was diminutive. But then he went crazy and started throwing things through shop windows, so he let us all down. But... No, it would obviously be nicer to be a bit taller and to have some easy charisma. You know what I mean?
Well, would it though? But what kind of, you know,
the only
what
good
kind
thing
of a
about,
man would you be?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'd probably be awful. But it would be
They're
fun.
They're all awful, those tall people.
They're quite arrogant and haughty.
Yeah.
And also, they pay for it when they're traveling. They're often uncomfortable. And
yes, that's true.
For Buckles, it's first class wherever I go. I'm like Ronnie Corbett in the big chair. So that's nice. And I'm generally comfortable in bed and things like that.
I'd rather be witty and clever, though, it'd be nice to be both, I think. But it'd be if you had to choose between the two, it's nice to be witty, isn't it, than be... strapping and throwing a child into the roof. I mean, I don't think I couldn't have given him my. It's the kind of thing, if you in that situation, if I'd gone up and said, my daughter would really like to be thrown into the roof, but I can't do it. Can you do it? That's a very different thing, isn't it? Because if he drops and kills his own kid, you know, he's in trouble with his wife, but it's okay. If he drops my child, that's another. If you drop a child you don't know by throwing... I mean, like, fucking hell. I mean, I'm so timid, really. I'm getting better. My daughter's so adventurous that she's making me more adventurous, weirdly.
Uh-huh.
But the idea of the risk involved of literally throwing him 6 feet above...
No, it's appalling. Well, you and I spoke about this on my podcast, that weird vertiginous... thing that you get of just imagining all the terrible things, especially when they're very little.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, it's awful. I'm so glad I'm out of that section. Now they're just responsible for themselves. Although now, quickly, you know, they're getting into clearly finding me tiresome. And so that's a whole other sad stage that I'm going to have to go through. My son's turned into a kind of vinyl snob.
Right.
So he's now going and buying with his pocket money and then just getting my wife to buy for him all these records on vinyl that I already have on CD. But he's turning his nose up at them because it's like, oh no, CDs sound crap. So he's going and buying all these things. He's like a proper creepy old vinyl snob. And so but he's too timid to ask for what he wants in the record shop in Norwich. So my wife has to go up and say, excuse me, do you have any early Aphex Twin or any hangable autobulb or V-snares, any early drill and bass? And my son kind of hangs out at the back of the shop. This is bad, I shouldn't be talking about him like this. But it's quite nice, though. It's nice to bond with him over that stuff.
Yeah.
It's nice. I mean, there's more good days than bad days being a dad, but it is scary sometimes.
Yeah.
When you just think about what a stupid person I am. And, oh, dear, it's shocking.
I think you must be an amazing dad. You must be an amazing person.
No, because I'm so ignorant.
Well, that's good. I don't know. That's what you want in a dad.
Yeah, I suppose they're not going to feel intimidated by me intellectually, certainly.
But it's being fun. My daughter's already outgrown my sense of humour, so I'm she's only 2 1/4. I'm hoping she'll come back, but I'll get a bit of time with her. But she's completely. She thinks I'm an idiot.
Yeah, is she doing jokes still?
Yeah, she's. I was saying the other podcast, she sort of does little funny things, and I think she is going to be funny. She was messing around with her jigsaw and putting the jigsaw pieces deliberately in the wrong place.
Classic,
yeah,
classic stuff.
It's good.
Five
stuff.
Stars, yeah. The Scotsman.
But she knew it was wrong. There's something else she was doing. I can't remember what it was, but she's. We have good when she forgets that she is above me.
Yeah,
and she just so is. She's so. I mean, I think the weird thing is, neither me and my wife are cool people. We're both quite nerdy, dweeby people, and quite shy people. And our daughter is quite cool.
Mm.
Like, she's got some sunglasses bought on holiday, and she was wearing a new outfit the other day. And I wanted to take a photo for her auntie had bought it, and she put the sunglasses on and just went. And I was going, say cheese. And she just going. And then the minute the camera went down, she went. So she kind of was posing already, and she knew what being cool was.
It's innate. I think it's part of the biological makeup on a genetic level of the human race is changing and adapting to Instagram and various other apps. It's they understand all that innately. It's weird. It's like when they pick up devices and they instantly understand that you have to swipe them and do this kind of thing. You know, it's weird.
It is freaky, but you should definitely have. If you haven't got children, have them.
Have them because
have them, even because whether you want them or not,
there's loads of resources. We're fine for resources for the foreseeable future. Everything's going well. There's going to be another election within the next 6 months. Jeremy Corbyn's going to get in. He's going to sort everything out. So have some children to enjoy that fun park of a world.
It's all right. Well, we should probably wrap up at some point soon. I'm moving to the countryside. I was going to ask about advice about that.
We're eat a lot of peaches. That's what I was singing when we moved. Moving to the country, going to eat a lot of peaches. Do you not remember that song? Presidents in the United States of America.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't remember them?
No. I've heard of them, but I'm not interested in music. It's a childish thing. We're getting a dog.
Yes.
My wife...
You're becoming me.
Yeah. My wife... we have. It's difficult to choose a name, right, for a dog. This is a little... Yep. She's only a puppy at the moment. We're not getting it for a few weeks.
Is it a lady dog or a man dog?
It's a girl dog.
Or a...
And it's a half German Shepherd, half Husky.
Oh.
And my wife wants to call her... I think it's going to be... Because I can't think of anything. She's going to call her Wolfie.
Wolfie is quite common. I've got a friend who's got a Wolfie.
Yeah.
I mean, there's worse names, though.
There is. I'm going to have a son as well, and we have to think of a name for him as well.
Right.
I've tried to get Booze into both the dog and the bay, which is from a routine of mine. There's a character in the Bible called Booze of Rahab, or Boaz of Rahab.
Well, there's a lawyer in S-Town in that podcast called Boozer, someone like
there is, yeah,
Boozer
yeah,
Downs.
Yeah, there is. I've noticed it.
That's a good
one.
But
my wife won't let me call my son Booze. Booze Herring.
Not even as a middle name?
No.
That's a shame.
But it's quite hard to... Phoebe, we kind of quite settled on Phoebe, and we both agreed on Phoebe.
Phoebe's
quite
a lovely name.
Yeah, but we can't think of, and I can only say I only do joke names, so I'm always trying to get.
Yeah,
red,
some joke names in there.
Rufus, because it's red, means redhead. That's, and I nearly got Rufus through for the boy. I think Rufus Herring is quite a nice name, but
Booze would be good. You're good. Lobby for Booze again.
Yeah.
When we got our little dog, who is now called Rosie. Our son Natty wanted to call her Steve, which I still think would have been the better name. That's a sort of stylish name.
It is. Well, I love calling animals by the first name and a second name.
Yeah,
that's always great.
Yeah.
With an animal, I nearly got my wife to call the dog Liz Lemon because she's a big fan of 30 Rock.
Yeah,
I just love going Liz, Liz. Just seems so wrong for a dog. Liz! But I think we're going with Wolfie.
Wolfie's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. But to be fair, she wants to call her Professor Wolfenstein. Oh, so yeah. When the dog's in trouble, it's Professor Wolfenstein, which I think is quite good.
That's fine. I mean, yeah. It's no worse than calling your son Titus.
Yes.
Like, people constantly, they still, in the modern world, give their children names like Titus. Yeah. There was someone in the shop at the airport the other day who was going after, I think it was either a Titus or it was something like a Hercules or I don't know what.
I was gunning for Hercules. We live in Hercules Terrace at the moment.
Oh, right. Hercules is good.
Hercules Herring.
Hercules Herring. Come on!
For the son, that's not the dog. That would be ridiculous for a female dog. But for Hercules Herring.
Do it!
Yeah.
What would it shorten to? Herc?
Herc. Hercule.
There was Hercule. A Herc in The Wire, wasn't there?
Yes, there was,
Herc. Yeah, Herc. Go for that.
Herc. Herc Herring.
I'm behind you.
Herc. Because there were people suggesting Heath and things like that. You can't have Heath Herring. It's too... They've got, Heath Herring. It's too... But my dad's called Keith Herring. I didn't realise. So and that's fine. So Heath Herring. No.
It sounds like Keith Herring.
Keith Haring, yeah. The Herring, the gay artist.
There you go.
Yeah.
The gay artist.
The gay...
That one. The one gay artist.
He was ostracized.
You know, the homosexual fellow.
It's so unlike my dad.
What's the name of that artist? The gay one.
Before we go, I just have to ask you, you're born in Hammersmith according to Wikipedia, and I know you think you're born in Shepherd's Bush.
Gold Hawk Road, what's that?
Well, it's on the border. What is the tallest building in Hammersmith?
Oh, mate. I've no idea. I mean, there's just a flyover in the Palais there, as far as I know.
Well, Wikipedia, or maybe my Google search, went for the Empress State Building in Earls Court, which I think is stretching Hammersmith a bit. That's 117 metres high.
Is this one of your emergency questions?
Yeah, well, sort of. I'm just asking guests if they know the tallest building. What's the tallest building in Norwich?
Oh, the Cathedral?
Yeah, but I would think it probably is. But the Google said Norwich City Hall.
Yeah. 60, imagine
63
and there was me thinking it was the cathedral.
Well, I think the cathedral
in
must
fact
be.
It wasn't, it was Norwich City Hall.
Well, that's what this says.
Does it say by how much it's taller?
I didn't look up the cathedral. We can look it up maybe backstage. That could maybe be what we do. Anyway, look, I think we should. It's been lovely talking to you. We may maybe have to get you back another time.
I don't know. We'll have to see what the listeners think after this performance.
Okay. I've only been on your podcast.
You know what I was going to do? Well, I was going to, because I sometimes overprepare. And the thing that I overprepare, tell me, like, you don't have to do it, right?
Yeah.
But would this be good? Because I was watching a program about 1984 on BBC4.
Yes.
I love those shows. And it had a little section about Free Nelson Mandela, the song.
Yeah.
And Jerry Damas was talking about it. And I was reminded, A, what a good song it is. Yeah. B, how actually effective it was. One of the few political songs that had a clear effect, a positive effect. And so I was... And you know how the verse goes... 21 years in captivity.
Yeah.
Are you so blind that you cannot see? Are you so deaf that you cannot hear? I was thinking we could just carry on doing, like, are you so something that you can't something? And see how long we could go for. Like, go back and forth. I got like some music for it. You can cut this out, right?
Yeah, we probably have to, the things I'm thinking.
It's the karaoke version, so it's clearable. 21 years in captivity. Are you so blind that you cannot see? Are you so deaf that you cannot hear?
Are you so lame that you cannot walk?
Are you so stupid you don't understand?
Are you so sexually impotent you can't get an erection?
Are you so short that you cannot reach?
Are you so tall that you cannot reach down?
A Are you so slow? You need to... This is not good, is it? That's why...
Is it going to be you so slow you need to speed up?
Yeah. That's why they restricted it to just those two verses. I would have been going in there every day going, Jerry, I got a new one. Are you so boring that no one wants to talk to you about it? What about that? Jerry, come back. All right. I tried.
Oh, my God. Thank you very much for coming back, Adam. It's always a lovely to see you. Next time I'm in Norwich, I'm going to give you a ring.
Please do.
I will do.
Let's do it, man.
Let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Buxton!
Thanks so much.
Listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Adam Buxton. He's a 3-time guest. He's a winner, my friends. The music is by Pest. Thank you very much to everyone at Go Past the Strike. Thank you to everyone at Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you also to everyone at British Comedy Guide and Ian Tunes and his gang up at iTunes and Ewan Chu up at YouTube. I also like him. The producer of this show is Ash Caffrey. It is a fuzz. GoFasterStripe.com and RichardHerring.com. SkyPotato.com production. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. Do check out RichardHerring.com/gigs and you can come and see all my other gigs. And if you're thinking of changing your energy companies, go to some comparison sites, honestly. And if you end up with Bulb, go to bulb.co.uk/refer/Richard234 and we could all be laughing. It could be amazing. Come on. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.